Let us begin. Today we are going to begin a new section. I apologize, the source sheets are a little bit, there's a mistake on the top. It says the heavens again. We're not doing the heavens, Amir Hashem. Now we are focusing on the earth. So we're going to be doing the Aretz, or the Eretz. So we're going to begin with number one in Perek Shira, with number one on the source sheet. I just want to point out, you know, as a little bit of a follow-up to our class last week, our exciting and spirited discussion last week. I don't remember who had mentioned it, but someone had mentioned that every Jew who has gone to space has died. So that statement bothered me a little bit. And actually someone else who heard the shiur emailed me and he said, interestingly enough, there have been 16 astronauts or cosmonauts, also counting the Russian space program, who were Jewish, and only two have died during their missions. So that means, Baruch Hashem, 14 Jews have gone to space and come back. So I think always important to be factually based. So not every Jew, Baruch Hashem, who has gone to space has died. So at least that particular point can serve as a raya for our ongoing conversations. Good. So please, whoever mentioned that, whoever got that information from wherever you got to, it's kedai probably to send back this piece of information to that individual. Let them know that Baruch Hashem, they're wrong. It's a good thing that they're wrong, because obviously if every Jew went to space died, that'd be very bad. Baruch Hashem, the majority have not. Again, whether or not, how that flows into our hashkafic discussion is a different idea, but at least factually, Baruch Hashem, 14 out of 16 have gone and have come back safely. Okay, with that, a little less controversial. We're going to get into the earth, although there's going to be some controversy with this as well. Amir Hashem, controversy is always good. You know, the part of the beauty, I'm sure as you know through your years of learning, the part of the beauty of Yiddishkeit is that although there is an element of religion, every religion, that has blind faith, right? Religion always requires blind faith. In other words, you could only prove so much through anything, right? This is what makes emuna something so incredible. You know, that's why, you know, there's so much literature about going ahead and proving the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or proving all these different things through science, through mathematics. Of course, it's incredible to try to prove, but the beauty of emuna is that it's exactly that, is that it's emuna, is that it's a belief. And there's only so much you could prove belief, because at the end of the day, what makes emuna so special is a willingness to believe even in the absence of proof. So we're going to discuss a little bit more. We'll focus in number one, Eretz Omeres. So the earth says. So let's talk about the earth. We're going to spend the Miratz Hashem at least this week, possibly even going into next week, focusing a little bit on the messages and the lessons of the earth. Again, I apologize. The source sheet is titled The Heavens, but it should really be titled The Earth. My apologies for that. But let's look at number one. Eretz Omeres. So what does the earth say? Does everyone got the new sheets? Hopefully they went around, the new source sheets. Okay. Eretz Omeres. So the earth says. What does the earth say? Quoting the Pasuk from Tehillim. L'David mizmar l'Hashem ha'aretz umlo'o. Tevel v'yoshve va. So the Eretz quotes the Pasuk, ultimately again from Sefer Tehillim, Perek of Dalet, Pasuk Aleph, L'Hashem ha'aretz umlo'o, which interestingly enough, by the way, you'll begin to see also how Perek Shira begins to kind of merge one into the other. Although each part of nature delivers its own unique, almost self-contained message, there's an incredible amount of overlap. So for example, you know, we spoke about last week this idea of Hashamayim Shamayim LaHashem Va'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. The heavens belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yet the earth belongs to man. Yet here, what does the Eretz say? LaHashem Ha'aretz Umlo'o. The earth belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tevel Liyoshve Ba, the inhabited area and all that dwell within it. So of course, as we've already begun to see, even though we're not so far into Perek Shira, is that the entire essence of Perek Shira is that the earth delivers a message. The Eretz delivers, everything in nature delivers a message to man. There's two parts of this message. There's the part of the message, ultimately, again, of the creation itself. And then there is the message that the creation conveys to man. So what's the message over here? So before we get to the message, we're going to analyze a little bit of the pasuk. So what's the meaning of this phrase, L'Hashem Ha'aretz? First of all, let me just as an aside, you'll notice, by the way, throughout Sefer Tehillim, that often some kapitlach begin with L'David Mizmar, some begin Mizmar L'David. What's the difference between the two? Oh, I owe you a bracha. You know, I thought that there was like murmuring coming from the back of the class, and now I realize it's from here. So I apologize if I was choshen b'ksheirin at all. Thank you so much for being attentive. We'll talk to them later. All right, so what's there seen? Mizmar, David and David Mizmar? What's the difference? Yes? Just talk a little louder. Beautiful, beautiful. So one opinion, excellent, is that the David Mizmor is David HaMelech in a state of happiness. So he begins the capital in a state of happiness. Mizmor le David, the happiness comes from the singing of the Shira. Excellent. Another interpretation? Beautiful, excellent. That Mizmor LeDavid some understand to be a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu versus LeDavid Mizmor, a message to David himself. Excellent. What else? Along the same lines, what else? Third interpretation. The Malbim explains that, and this is incredible, that the difference is, did David begin in a state of inspiration or did he self-inspire? In Chassidus, and we're going to talk about this a little bit kind of throughout our journey in Perek Shira, is that there's what's called Is Arusa de la Eva and Is Arusa de la Tasa. If you've ever heard these, anyone ever hear these concepts before? Good. So what does it mean? Anyone know? Yes. Excellent. So let me just reframe that a little bit. In the world of inspiration, there are two different states of inspiration. Sometimes a person experiences a wave of inspiration. Just a wave of inspiration. We've all had moments like this where just I feel inspired. And if you ask me why I feel inspired, I'm not even sure. I can't point to any particular thing. I can't give you any particular reason. There's just a wave of inspiration which sweeps over me. So in Chassidus, the idea is that is arusa de la'eva, an awakening, or as was mentioned, an arousal from above. That the Ribono Shel Olam is inspiring me. He's awakening me. What have I done? Maybe nothing. Maybe sometimes that is arusa de la'eva, ultimately, again, it's just the gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then there's Is Arusa Dilatasa, which means an awakening or an inspiration from below, where a person has to self-inspire. I feel totally uninspired. It's like a spiritual flatline. I feel absolutely nothing. But in those moments, I must endeavor to self-inspire. See, interestingly enough, many of the Sfarim bring down that this is a distinction in the Kapitlach. When it's Mizmar LeDavid, that's Is Arusa de la Eva. Those are moments when David HaMelech was inspired from above. The Ribono Shel Olam showered upon him an incredible wave of inspiration, and David felt a spiritual awakening. Versus Le David Nizmar, where David HaMelech had to self-inspire. He wasn't feeling it, he wasn't inspired, he wasn't overwhelmed, he went out of his way to inspire himself. Just as an aside, which one do you think there are more of in Sefer Tehillim? Mizmar LeDavid or LeDavid Mizmars? It's a 50-50 chance. LeDavid Mizmar. Good, it was a 50-50. Right? Interesting, there are more LeDavid Mizmars, which tells you something absolutely amazing. What's the lesson if there are more LeDavid Mizmars? What's the lesson? Life is all about self-inspiration. You know, this is the incredible pitfall in inspiration. People wait to be inspired, right? Again, everybody loves inspiration. I'm waiting to be inspired. Who's going to inspire me? You know, my Rebbe, my Mora, my teacher, my Rebbe, my Rav, my mentor. Somebody's going to inspire me. The truth is, yes, in life it's wonderful to have inspirational people. But more often than not, if you want to be inspired, it's arusa dilatasa. You must self-inspire. You want to lead an inspired life? Inspire yourself. Do not wait for other people to inspire you. Take the reins of inspiration yourself, which in general, by the way, is the cloud gadol in life. Do you know why most people don't accomplish the things they want to accomplish? You're young, so none of you know this yet. Medicine, you'll accomplish all things you want to accomplish. But as you get a little older, you may meet some people who are very unaccomplished. Most people are unaccomplished. Why? Because often what they do is they wait for other people to do things. Right? I want to accomplish A, B, and C, but I need this one to do this, and I need this one to do that, and I need this person to do this. The moment you begin to outsource your success to other people is the moment that in life you will not succeed. Klal Gadol in life is, if you want to be successful, take the reins of your life yourself. You must be responsible for you. The buck of your life stops with you. People have a variety of excuses as to why they don't do the things they want to do. But at the end of the day, no one is responsible for your life except for you. It's true for inspiration, it's true for accomplishment, it's true for whatever you want to do in life. It's true. You cannot control some of the factors of success, but at the end of the day, only you have the reins of your life. Of course, the Ribono Shel Olam plays, he choreographs everything. But Lamaise, in terms of the realm of Hishtadlos, you have the reins of your life. So the fact that David HaMelech is, so much of Tehillim is the David Mizmor. You think about David HaMelech, you know, remember, whenever you think about an image of David HaMelech, what's the image that comes to mind? Like whenever you see like a painting depicting David HaMelech, what's always the image? A harp. Hey, it's always so interesting. David HaMelech is sitting there on a rock, right? And she's strumming the harp. How much time did David HaMelech spend with a harp? Anyone know? So right, so the Gemara Masechet Brachos says that he put a harp above his bed. Excellent, that was his alarm clock. But the Ratzon is excellent. I guarantee you, David HaMelech spent very little time actually sitting on a rock playing a harp. For one simple reason, from the moment that he became king, his life was one challenge after the next. David HaMelech had every single problem you could possibly imagine. He had Shalom Bayis issues. He had problems with his children. He experienced, Rachman HaSalam, the death of a child. He had internal enemies. He had external enemies. The only problem that David HaMelech didn't have was, we mentioned this, I think, before, Parnasa. Baruch Hashem, he was king. You see, he was wealthy, and he came from a well-to-do family as well. See, he never struggled with money. Okay, that was the only problem. But aside from Parnasa, he suffered, his health suffered. David HaMelech had every single problem you could possibly imagine. So the notion of David HaMelech just sitting carefree on a rock, strumming the harp, is very far from reality. That was not his life. Yet the greatness of David HaMelech is that despite the fact that he had every challenge and every adversity, by the way, this is why, what's the power of Sefer Tehillim? You know, Sefer Tehillim is such an amazing thing. Raise your hand if you understand every word in Tehillim. No, right? Isn't it incredible that often when I say a capital Tehillim, I have no idea what I'm saying. No idea. Yet why is it that it speaks to me? In times of distress, I go to my Tehillim. In times of Tehillim, I go to my Tehillim. Because Sefer Tehillim is written by the man who experienced every dimension of the human condition. Whatever tzara you could think of, he experienced it. But conversely, whatever simcha you could think of, Baruch Hashem, David HaMelech also experienced it. David HaMelech lived the continuum, the entire continuum of the human dynamic, of the human experiential dynamic. Whatever could happen, did happen to him. David HaMelech lived a life. Remember, think about this just a moment. What was happening with David HaMelech while he was on his deathbed? End of Melachim Aleph. What's happening with David HaMelech? No, Melachim Aleph? Yeah, what's happening on his deathbed? Right, who's rebelling? Adonia ben Chagis, excellent. Adonia ben Chagis misnase leimar ani emloch. David HaMelech can't even die in peace. He can't even die in peace. The man can't die in peace. He's laying in bed. He's dying. You know the story. Nasan Hanavi and Batsheva are trying to figure out, like, what do we do? Adoniram ben Chagias is saying, right, I'm the king. Shlomo is not saying anything because that wasn't Shlomo's derech to go and assert himself. David, you see, interestingly enough, as much as it was clear in David's mind that Shlomo was going to be the heir, David HaMelech apparently never made a declarative statement saying that Shlomo was going to be the heir. So there's all this ambiguity. So Nas, Anavi, and Bathsheba trying to figure out, poor David is dying, but we need him to make a declaration before he dies that Shlomo is going to be the king, because if he doesn't make this declaration, it's going to be civil war. Who knows what's going to happen? Poor David HaMelech can't even die in peace. The man knows no shalom in this world. But amazingly enough, despite all that, le David Mismar. That, if you want to know what the central takeaway message of all of Sefer Tehillim, and I give a class on Wednesday mornings for WIT, for the women's program in Sefer Tehillim. We've been doing Tehillim probably for about, I don't know, 7-8 years. We're only up to Kapitel, I don't know, maybe Samech Zayin, Samech Ches. But if you want to understand the entire essence of Sefer Tehillim, it's that no matter what's happening in your life, with David Mizmor, no matter what's happening in your life, you could find the koach to inspire. No matter what's happening in your life, you cannot give up the reins of your existence. You cannot fall into the clutches of Yeush. You have to continue forward, and you cannot give up no matter how bad it is, because the Ribono Shel Olam is always by your side, and somehow, some way, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. Good. So now comes along the Eretz. And what does the Eretz, what does the earth say? Le David Mizmar. So again, leaving aside, now we've spoken about David Mizmar. La Hashem Aretz Imlo. The entire world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The earth and everything in it belongs to God. Tevel V'yoshve Bo. So let's spend a little bit of time analyzing this pasuk. And then Amir Hashem, hopefully on Wednesday, we'll come back and try to understand what the core message of the Eretz actually is. So says the Gemara Maseches Bracha. It's a well-known Gemara. Rabbi Levi Rami. Rabbi Levi says, we seem to have two contradictory phrases. On one hand, it says, Ksiv, La Hashem Ha'aretz Umlo. It says that literally the earth, the world belongs to Hashem. Uksiv, HaShamayim Shamayim La Hashem, V'Ha'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. So what's the contradiction? What's the contradiction? Which one is it? Who does the earth belong to? Does the earth belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? LaHashem HaAretz UMelo'o, that the earth belongs to God? Or is it HaAretz Nasan Livnei Adam? Or is earth given over to man? So again, you understand, what does it matter who the world belongs to? If it's matter, if it's God, like what's, as you say in halacha, what's the nafkamina? What's the practical difference? I'm sorry? On a very simple level, if it belongs to me, right, anything I own, I have the right to determine what to do with it. If I don't own it, then I have to ask the owner what to do with it. Good. And just, again, this goes back to our previous conversation with the Vikiv Shua idea. Vikiv Shua, what's the extent of Vikiv Shua? If at the end of the day, I am the owner of the... If at the end of the day, I am the owner of the earth... Good. Baruch Hashem. It's good to be drowned out by simchas. It's not working. Yeah. It's okay. Is it plugged in? Okay, good. I know Mrs. Glazer tried to. It's fine. Okay, so at the end, so if the earth is mine, if I'm the Bailin, if I'm the owner of the earth, and I could determine how to use it, if I'm not the owner of the earth, then I have to consult the Kodesh Baruch Hu how to use it. So you must. So who owns the earth? Who's in charge? To which the Gemara says, Lokash, it's not a contradiction. Kan kodem bracha, kan la'achar bracha. The Gemara says, it's two different states. HaKodesh Baruch Hu owns the earth before I make a bracha, but I own the earth after I make a bracha. So remember, just very, 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 the Gemara over Maseches Brachos is focusing on a very narrow thing. I didn't give you the rest of the context, but you can see from the answer, what is the Gemara really focusing on over here? Which part of the earth? Food. Food. That's really what it's focusing on over here. Right? So ultimately, again, the food belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The food, the fruits of the earth, belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu before I make the bracha. But after I make the bracha, then I become the owner over the fruit, over the food. So let's analyze this a little bit. So the Maharal in Gur Aryeh, in number 3, comments on this. And he says something quite profound. He says, well, lefichach, amru, kol anena mina olam below bracha ma'o. The Gemara says, it's actually very interesting. The Gemara says, whoever benefits from the world before going ahead or without making a bracha has committed mi'ila. What's mi'ila? What's mi'ila? I'm sorry? Take it from the base of Mi'ilish. Good. So mi'ila means mundane use of consecrated property. Right, so again, on a simple level, the Beis HaMikdash goes ahead and owns a pile of wood. I go ahead and I decide to take from some of that wood and build my deck. That's called mi'ila. So mundane use of consecrated property. So the Maharal says, according to Gemara, that if you eat from this world, you partake, you enjoy of this world without making a bracha, it is as if you have committed mi'ila. Now let's analyze it just a moment. If I want to go ahead and take wood from the Beis HaMikdash to go ahead and build my deck, can I do that? Can I do it? There is a way to do it. How do you do it? I could redeem that wood from the Beis HaMikdash, right? So I can go ahead, without getting into all the technicalities, I can pay the Beis HaMikdash, I can pay the value of the wood, plus an additional surcharge, and I can redeem the wood and then use it to go ahead and build my deck. I do have that ability to do so. So the Gemara says, but so if you take something from this world without making a bracha, it is as if you have committed mi'ila. Mimnei shakasav, la'ashema aretz umlo'o. So this is an incredible dynamic, and I'm sure you're all familiar with this. How does a bracha work? So a bracha works very simply. There's an apple. Who does the apple belong to? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what right do I have to go ahead and enjoy the apple if it belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So what's the mechanism? What's the license for enjoyment? A bracha. But how does that work? How does that work? So the Maharal says, it's very simple. The way it works is the bracha is the mechanism of redemption. It's the same way that if I go to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash has a pile of wood, and I want to go ahead and use that wood to build my deck, I'm not allowed to do so. But there's a mechanism of redemption. I could redeem the wood from the Beis HaMikdash, and I can then go ahead and utilize that wood to build my deck. So similarly, the apple belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I make the bracha, that bracha is the mechanism through which I redeem the apple. I take the apple, just like again, I take the wood from the Beis HaMikdash's domain or their ownership, and I transfer it into mine. The bracha is the mechanism through which I transfer the apple from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's domain to mine. Yes?
When you redeem wood from the Beis HaMikdash, you have to redeem it onto something?
Yeah, you transfer it onto money. Ah, excellent, good. Excellent, excellent. So very important point. Remember, sanctity is a reality. So you could redeem something. You could redeem something from a sanctified status, but you must transfer that sanctity onto something else. By the way, what's the paradigmatic example of that? Maaser Sheni, excellent, excellent. Maaser Sheni is paradigmatic. Remember again, I have Maaser Sheni, which is mine to eat, but I have to eat it where? Yerushalayim. The farmer is blessed with an abundance of produce. I don't want to schlep all of my produce to Yerushalayim. So what could I do? What could I do? I could transfer the Maaser Sheni sanctity onto money. But that sanctity, if it's going to be removed from the fruit, it has to devolve upon something else. So yes, when I redeem the wood from the Beis HaMikdash, I'm transferring the sanctity. What am I transferring the sanctity onto? Money. Same idea. Because I'm buying the wood from the Beis HaMikdash. So how does that work by bracha? So hold on to that for just a moment. Hold on. So watch this. So says the Maharal, number three. He says, Lefichach amru kalanena mina olam below bracha ma'al mibnei shakas ala shamar tzum lo'o. V'atama ze yadua. So what does this mean? What does this mean? That if a person goes ahead and benefits from the world without making a bracha, that they've committed mi'ila. Right? Mi'ila means literally mundane usage of consecrated property. Because with that the earth and everything in it belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shem Kodesh Chal Alof. The world, and everything in it is endowed with an incredible level of sanctity. Kimo kol davar shu l'Hashem, hu mekudash l'shmo yisbarach. So the same way that something that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash is fully infused with Beis HaMikdash identity, so everything in this world, because it was created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately again is mekudash l'shmo yisbarach, has ribono shel olam sanctity. And therefore, if I go and I take something from this world and I just get benefit from it without any type of redemption mechanism, I have committed an act of mi'ila. V'hari akolu la'ashem v'chalshim shamayim alav v'anena mimenu ma'al kimo mishenena midavar deshim shamayim mikra alav v'alze amar la'ashem ha'aretz umlo'o.
So the Maharal just explains this idea of the Gemara a little bit more. That if the Ribono Shel Olam created something, it means that the Kedusha of the Ribono Shel Olam is on this item. So I think this is incredibly important. Because we're all aware, right? We believe in the Ribono Shel Olam, not just as a historical creator, but as a contemporary creator as well, right? What do we say every single day in Davening? HaMechadish B'tuvo B'chol Yom Tamid Ma'aseh Bereishis. We do not look at creation as a historical event. We look at creation as an ongoing, contemporary event as well. So says the Maharal, everything that you find in this world was created by Hashem. And if it's created by Hashem, that means it's endowed with Kedusha. And if it's endowed with Kedusha, that means I can't just take it and utilize it, because that's tantamount to an act of Mi'ila. That's tantamount to an unconsecrated act or a prohibited usage of consecrated property. So comes along the bracha, and what does the bracha do? The bracha goes out and somehow. So what does the bracha do? Let me ask. What does the bracha do? It redeems it. It redeems it. What's missing, as was mentioned before, what's missing? The transfer. Right, so now I understand the beginning. So I pick up the apple, which means it's a very simple deal. I pick up the apple. I go ahead and I say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Kirem HaLachamon, Borei Priya Eitz. I've redeemed, somehow, I've redeemed the apple. Which seems to mean I've removed the Ribono Shel Olam's Kiddusha from this apple, so that now it's no longer the Ribono Shel Olam's apple, it's mine. And therefore I can eat it. Okay, but where did the sanctity go? We just said again, remember, if an apple before a bracha is like a piece of wood before redemption, I can go to the base and just purchase the wood. But again, I remove the sanctity from the wood, transfer it onto what? Onto what? Onto the money that I pay the Beis HaMikdash. The money has a sanctity, the piece of wood does not. So bracha removes the kiddusha from the apple. Where does the kiddusha go? So look at number four, Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov comments on this. And this is an incredibly beautiful piece from the Kuti Halachas. So here the Rebbe writes as follows. He says, Ki kol habrachas shemevarchin al kol advarim kulam heim bebechinas motzi mikoach el hapoel. So listen to this incredible phrase. All the brachas that we make, right, on all different things, heim bebechinas motzi mikoach el hapoel. How would you translate that phrase? Motzi mikoach el hapoel? Excellent. So they transform potential into kinetic. Potential into kinetic, right? There's potential energy, there's kinetic energy. Brachas take the potential or turn it into actual. Let's analyze this. Kikodim shemavarchin al hadavar umodim shemis barach baros. So in the left-hand paragraph, because before you make a bracha and you admit, right, you admit, literally you declare that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it, kodem lazeh ein shleimos lahadavar. There is no completion to the item. Ve'ein nimshach shleimos hachiyos tekedusha la'osadavar. So let's first translate the Rebbe's words, and then we'll try to understand the deeper meaning of what he's saying. So before a person goes in and makes a bracha on a particular item, and through the bracha he admits that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate creator, kodem loze ein shleimus lahadavar. What does it mean? Kodem loze ein shleimus lahadavar? I'm sorry? There's no completion to the item. So what does this mean? Hapam odas Hashem, it's true. Good. So before you go ahead and Before you go ahead and you make a bracha, so the Rebbe suggests over here, you know, girls, you know what we're going to do? I think what we're going to do is we're going to stop over here with this idea from the Rebbe, and Emir Tashem, we will pick up with this on Wednesday, Emir Tashem. Yes.